Okay, so it's a pleasure to be here, kind of really nice to see how theoretician work, kind of. Nice. Right. And yeah, thanks for inviting me, and I hope to tell you something like a bit of how we do experimental things with graphene. It's not very usual what people usually do with graphene, right? So you probably will see some new things learned, and maybe you can help us with interpretation what we see there, because there is many things which we don't really understand on the experimental thing, right? So, and effectively that's very good, like, meeting, because I remember, like, you know, Volody was working with his group with graphene for a while, and once we experimented graphene in my group and just, like, showed this graphene in the optical microscope, you know, different color blotches there, kind of different shape. And a few guys came there and said, "Oh my God, I studied this for several years and they didn't know how it looked like." So, right, so that was kind of really fun. So what I would like to talk about today, it's about the mapping of mechanical and thermal properties of graphene nanostructures with different types of scanning probe microscopy. Some of them you probably haven't heard of, some of them you probably had heard of, but maybe you will see like how exactly it works and what you can get from this one. So this is nice landscape of near Lancaster. It's different style, but also probably as beautiful as like Big Sur and Santa Barbara area here. Right, so the main reason and main motivation so to study this mechanical and thermal probes of graphene is that mechanical probes, they are really vital for any device which you produce, especially if this kind of graphene, which is material which is really flexible, very high anisotropy in the perpendicular and in plane, and so with a different style of adhesion to the surfaces, and if you like to incorporate this in the devices, it's really, these properties, they do matter a lot. Right, so another thing is thermal properties, and if you think about graphene, there are three good things about this, right? One is high mobility, right? It's not necessarily the high conductivity, because carrier still there, right? Another is really super high mechanical properties, right? And super high thermal conductivity there. So therefore, people do study a lot about the electrical properties of graphene, because that's how it came about. About the mechanical properties and thermal properties, only recently started to explore this, but usually it's done kind of in the flakes in the bigger area. And for example, if you would like to study the graphene mechanical properties, people try to bend using the, for example, scanning probe tip, this graphene film which is supported, and see this property as a whole of this like big area of graphene. Or if you study the thermal properties, it's done these days using the shining the laser light, seeing kind of this heating of graphene by this by the laser, and observing the Raman, and by the Raman shift you would see what is the temperature of the resulting of graphene. In this case, you get the resolution which is on the scale of micrometer, which is really way above the thickness of graphene of like fraction of nanometer, right? So, and in this case, when you just bend the whole graphene sheet, again, you don't get the special resolution there. And we deployed several methods effectively to overcome this and really to map both mechanical properties and thermal properties with the high spatial resolution.
Is it to separate the thermal properties of graphene and thermal properties of the substrate?
Actually, here it's not really, because what you see here, you see several things, and we kind of just prepare the paper and kind of with Volodya interpretation. This one is that what you have here, you have the conductance in plane of graphene. I will talk a bit more about this one, but then you have the interface between graphene and the trench, which is there, and then you still have some propagations of heat or phonons, really. So there. And interaction over some length there. So therefore, that's really, even in this case, it's very much convoluted with the properties of the interface and attachment of graphene to the substrate there. But I will talk about more like when we see the kind of real results of measurements, right? So graphene nanomechanics. In order to measure these mechanical properties, what we do, because graphene is really very stiff material, at least in one dimension. So we apply the ultrasonic force microscopy, and that's crudely for the best probably image for the theoreticians to look at. It's the, we have the sample deposited on the piezo transducer, and if we vibrate it at very, very high frequency. Also, we can vibrate the AFM cantilever at very high frequency, and this frequency can propagate towards the end. And then we have all the interaction of the very end of the tip with the surface, right? So what kind of interaction it is? So that's effectively, you could look at this, and from the point of analysis, it's probably the best to think of the tip surface force curve, which is, this is the force acting between tip and the surface, right? So this is the distance between tip and the surface. And that's how, like, when you approach the tip, what's happening, you have the attraction first, and you have repulsion, and then you're going back like this. So when you use these ultrasonic vibrations, what's happening? Your tip, which is, you see here, it's effectively cannot react on this ultrasonic vibration. It's stationary. And what it means that you vibrate this sample and the tip cannot move, right? Okay, it cannot move. What it means that you always modulate the tip surface distance. And now let's see what's happening if you modulate this tip surface distance. If you modulate this slightly, going like this tip surface distance over this period, so that your integral of your force over the period will be the same as central. So if you modulate it stronger, when you started to come to non-linearity, so therefore your integral over the period is different. An integral is the average force, right? So because you have this average force which is different from the whatever was before, you started to detect this high frequency vibration. Even the tip cannot move at high frequency, but you detect it as additional force which acts and cantilever moves up. And then what you do, you apply the vibration which is increasing in amplitude, like this, nothing, more. At some particular amplitude, when you started to reach this non-linearity, keep going up. And then what you do, you effectively modulate this periodically with very low frequency, so therefore your cantilever can respond to this frequency. So what good about this? The good thing is that you effectively indent even very stiff materials, right, with this ultrasonic vibration because the tip cannot move, so you always change this distance, so therefore you exert the force. What usually people do, if they just move their cantilever like this, so therefore the tip moves together with the cantilever, you always stay in the same force, you see nothing about the slope of this tip surface force interaction, right? So therefore it means that this allows you to deduce the shape of this thing, and that's what theoretician can help us with, right? From the resulting response of the nonlinear detection as a function of amplitude. So therefore effectively we can map the very stiff material's tip surface force interaction via this ultrasonic vibration. Okay, give you some examples about this, is that, for example, you could see sort of for some.
May I ask one question?
Of course, yeah, asking questions, so therefore it's very good.
So you say you can somehow measure the forces, but not the motion of the tip. I didn't really understand, like,
okay,
why it's better to have this oscillation as compared to just moving up.
Okay, so if you move up, so therefore a very simple thing to show is like this. If you have the cantilever, it's that spring, right, so there, right?
Yeah.
So, and if you have the sample, it's another spring here,
yes,
right? So what's happening, and this is mass, this is K cantilever, this is K sample, right? So theoretically it's better to show this way, right? So, and so then what's happening, if you move, for example, at a very slow motion, right? So therefore your two springs, they're compressed, but K sample is very stiff spring.
Okay.
What's happening? So therefore that your cantilever just moves together with the sample and that's it. So if you vibrate at very high frequencies, right? So therefore your forces which you exert here, that will not be...
But what do you actually measure in the very end? You measure them...
Okay, very good, right. So therefore, the point is you couldn't measure this if you compress the spring, if the spring will be linear, right? Because the spring has non-linearity. So you effectively can measure, you can detect this amplitude of this non-linearity, very crudely, put it this way, right? Okay, this is Z, right?
Yes.
So this is, say, force, and do this kind of linear thing like this, right? Right. So therefore, this is non-linearity, this is kink here. So therefore, if you apply small vibration, you see nothing, right? If you have vibration bigger, you could see additional force acting on the cantilever, right? But now this force at a very low frequency.
So you measure forces directly at the cantilever?
Yeah, because cantilever measures the displacement, and the force is proportional kc multiplied displacement.
Okay, this answers my question.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm just confused. You have frequency fc and fd, so.
Okay. So the cantilever resonance frequency, right? So there, in this case, is the FC, right? F is the frequency at which we vibrate. So therefore, if you vibrate at high frequency, then this mass actually does matter. And in addition to this force, you will say, no, it's probably all right, right? So you have m omega square, right? So here, you have additional force, which is inertial force. Right, so that's why vibrating frequency much higher than cantilever resonance frequency have the stiffness of the cantilever, you know, increased because of the stiff dynamical stiffness of the mass there. Right, so now this is cantilever deflection, so this is FD. What we are doing, we vibrate this way, increase amplitude, and like this, right? So this is F, right? So the high frequency vibration. And this is corresponding to FD. It's low frequency vibration. Because our force, which we have the additional force, we just modulate the high frequency with the low frequency. And so therefore, we can detect this low frequency much easier because the cantilever becomes, you know, very compliant, very sensitive to additional forces.
Amplitude modulation,
put it this way. Okay, right.
Can I ask one more thing to make sure it's clear? It looked like you were having two ultrasonic transducers, so that you
okay, I didn't come to the second transducer. I will come this to the very end of the talk. But said this, effectively the IFM cantilever, again, this kind of from the point of view experimentalist, the guy who's been working with acoustic for a while, cantilever is not a point mass. Cantilever is a distributed system. So it means the cantilever for the very high frequency, right, becomes very stiff, while for the low frequency it's very flexible, right? So therefore it means this kind of another part of this transducer here, because you vibrate at very high frequency, you effectively can move this vibration towards the very end of the tip. At the same time, you're able to detect this nonlinearity at the very by the nonlinear force.
I thought you were going to say that you sort of frequency down mix the contact resonance.
We do down mix. We call it heterodynamic force, and we detect it, right? So that's I will tell you at the end with this one. But we can down mix, and that will enable the system to have the low frequency kind of phase information about the high frequency phenomena, right? So that. Okay, so therefore that's kind of how things work. So therefore we're able to see the nonlinearly the vibration of the cantilever. And in this case, we can be able, for example, if you look at the, this is example not related to the graphene, just to show you that, to prove this how things the system works. So this is indium arsenide quantum dots on gallium arsenide substrate with thin layer capping on the top, right, so that. What's happening here, you have this kind of thin layer, this is how topography looks like. If you have the force modulation at low frequency, you see this constant everything, because this spring is very stiff. Either it's indium arsenide, quantum dots, or gallium arsenide substrate, it's infinitely stiff, right? So when you use the ultrasonic vibration, you can see, okay, you have the different areas here, which correspond to the quantum dots. It's not exactly showing on topography here. Right? So therefore, you're able to detect the different stiffnesses, which are much higher, otherwise undetectable by the normal FM cantilever. And this is effectively even cruder thing. So what we've done, we actually covered this so much. So therefore, the top effectively just the atomically flat steps, right, terraces. And with ultrasound, you could see this inside quantum dots with the resolution up to 5 nanometers. So we're able to see the materials which are inside. So therefore, we apply this to the graphene interfaces. And I will show you something about this. And we're able to distinguish between the different stiffness between the dot which is here and here. So this theory doesn't exist, right? So therefore we kind of more like hand waving. You can do like Hurston indention and everything. The point is that usually these materials, they're very anisotropic, even the quantum dots, right? So therefore they're there. And so therefore like you really have to understand how like we measure these. The point is that experimentally we're able to measure these. Theoretical interpretation doesn't exist yet. So you provide something that is really great.
So your tip constantly tapping on the sound?
It's opposite. It's I call it tapping from inside, you may think this way. Tip doesn't move, right? So effectively sample taps into the tip, right? With distance there, it's very small. It's not there tapping 20 nanometers, only like a few angstroms, up to 1 nanometer displacement, right? At very high frequency. And because it's very high frequency, so that you modulate this distance and you detect this high frequency as an additional force, right? Because then the same diode detects the RF vibrations, right? Exactly the same way.
Does the tip get worn out?
That's actually a good question. And I didn't plant you here to ask this question, right? But I can answer it, right?
It's not important.
No. It's actually, that's another very good thing, right? So there. Effectively, this, if you do this, you think, okay, the tip would be kind of really just very much quickly worn out. Effectively, it's opposite. What's happening here, if you have the tip which is vibrating, so part of the period you don't have any contact, right? So therefore, like, you just very gently go in there. And the tip slides, so therefore you allow for this part of the period, the frictional force which build up going away. For example, this is the image if you do the latex spheres, 90 nanometers polystyrene spheres put on the mica surface. And you could see this in the scan probe microscope that looks like this. So therefore, tip really moves the sample around. If you do exactly the same, but with ultrasound, so you have the perfect image of this one, as if you would be using the tapping mode, right? The reason for this is that you don't have the shear forces there because you allow the tip to disconnect from the surface every now and again. Okay, imagine like you have a sewing machine, right? So I don't know, I had like when I was a kid, my grandma had this, right? Have a sewing machine, right? If your needle is inside, is in contact, right? You try to pull the textile, you just break either needle or textile, right? Now imagine like when it's working, right? So the thing, you just move it, just go in there. That's a very similar way, right? Going there. So effectively going in and out, right? So, and allow to see these properties even of very soft materials, by the same token, not damaging the tip at all, right? So therefore, this is a very controversial thing, because we, as opposed to the tapping mode, we don't apply any extra force, the average force is the same, right? Because we have the feedback, it's the same. We just have the modulation of this force, which we detect, right? So that's how it works. That's called the ultrasonic force microscopy. Anyway, so now coming to graphene, right? So there. So what?
There was two diagrams, right?
Yeah.
What's the difference between?
Okay, so this is the topographical image, right? This is the image received with the ultrasonic force microscopy. It's actually elasticity image of these spheres, right? And if you see here the elasticity, you see, okay, spheres, they're softer than something which is in between. Effectively, whatever in between in this particular case, I can interpret what effectively happened. In these spheres, they're kind of closed packed, right, on the surface. When your tip is contacting the spheres, so your tip effectively contacts the spheres with two spots, right, when it's on the wedge. So these two spots gives the stiffness which is higher than the stiffness of the needle sitter. That's why you have this contrast here, this way, right?
And the one on the right is just...
And the one on the right is exactly the same image, but here we've done this without ultrasound imaging, right?
Uh-huh.
You see, we really can like move it around. And this one we done with ultrasound, so therefore you don't have this. It's really kind of nice system because it allows you to study very stiff as well as soft materials, right? And at the same time reduce friction. You think about this way. So I mean, you work with experimentalists anyway, right? You know that you can measure the resistance with the two probe and with 4-point probe, right? So two probes adds the resistance of the stiffness of resistance of the probes to the resistance of the measured device, right? Four probe measurements effectively sends the current, right, independently, and measures the voltage, This is exactly the same, but in mechanics. You effectively apply the displacement for very stiff system, but detect this at low frequency by the very low stiffness system. So therefore, you, this allows you to measure very wide range of stiffnesses, right?
What's the difference between A and the top two? They're both topography.
Okay, so this topography done without ultrasound, this topography with ultrasound, right? So that's one of my students, Franco Dinelli, who works in Pisa now. So therefore, he effectively called it ultrasonic induced superlubricity, right? He's Italian, kind of.
Right. But is that then in contact mode?
Both in contact mode. Both in contact mode.
One final question.
Yeah.
So it's a contact mode image with what feedback force, and then you're demodulating that at the chirp frequency of the ultrasonic transducer.
Right. Yeah.
What sort of feedback force?
What sort of contact force? Okay.
For the contact mode image.
Could be anything from positive to negative. We work in liquids, right? So we can work pretty low things. And I will go to this one. So therefore we go. But effectively, this could be anything from realistically like 1-2 nanonewtons, right? So if you have negative forces, they could go up to say 10 nanonewtons for graphene. But you have to keep in mind, it's not really 10 nanonewtons of the tip surface contact, because you have the tip which is attracted by other forces, right? So therefore, you have the very end of the tip still in positive contact there, right? But that's the range, right? Okay, now think about graphene. What exactly we observe when we look at the graphene layer, which is just exfoliated on the surface in very kind of very same way as graphene was discovered. So we see kind of small corrugations there, which is from the range of maybe 1-2 nanometers, right? So, but when we look with ultrasonic image, so what we see here, we see some areas which come protruded here. Some of them we don't really observe here, so which are darker. What it means? It means that something which is, so it's something which, when you have the graphene sheet, it like works like this one, right? So there. So therefore, you have some protrusions which effectively have lower stiffness than when graphene which sits on this sort of thing. Right. So this is what we have observed. Also, they usually kind of anisotropic, right? So there. And also, like we observed that they could be like really of different shape and size, anything from 20 to 40 to 50 nanometers. So when you use the force modulation, you don't see this, and I will show you this a bit later. Okay, so another thing about those, we call them nanodomes, right? So is that when they are kind of really much bigger, so what you can do, you can apply some force with ultrasound, and effectively can compress them. So therefore, like after the application of the force, for example, you see this one is the same as this, right? So two. So you can effectively compress. So therefore, that effectively shows that it's not something which is underneath. It's just the full compression of the this buckle of the graphene from the surface. And in this way, we could see the attachment and interface properties of how graphene is attached to the surfaces.
So this comes always out. They're always outward.
They're always outward. No, we never saw this, right? It kind of makes sense because the sample is flat. Okay, how flat? It's a good question. Okay, so this scale, so the previous was like 1 nanometer. These are effectively bigger. They're maybe about from 2 to maybe 10 nanometers tall there. So the sample flatness in this particular case was maybe about RMS roughness, maybe about half a nanometer on this scale. So therefore, it's of course it's not atomically flat. It's not mica, right? It's a normal silicon oxide on which we deposit this. I mean, silicon oxide layer on the silicon substrate there.
You would detect also the inwards factor in this
level? Yeah, we should be able. And effectively, what we're doing now, like one of my products, we are ordering kind of very fine tips, because this was where tips which has the range of curvature 10 nanometers, so therefore the contact probably around 1-2 nanometers, right? So therefore we're ordering the tips which are nominally like 2 nanometer radius of curvature. So therefore the contact, it really comes to this really atomic scale, and we work in controlled environment with this. So now trying really to understand what you say on the very smaller scale.
Please repeat what one should infer from the first time.
Yeah, from this one, what we infer, so therefore, like, we have these things which effectively, for example, Manchester Group, they think that there might be some different contamination on the top of the surface, right? So therefore, and what we can do, we effectively can compress this delamination, so therefore, they effectively see they're lower here, right? At the same time, what we see, so that your stiffness is restored, right? You don't have the bulge as such, you have the stiffness which is directly higher, because you don't have the...
You mean this horizontal trace?
This horizontal trace, right. And we're actually able to do this horizontal trace because we don't have any friction. We apply this high frequency modulation and friction goes, and you can apply higher force and compress it. And like, we'll come to this a bit like later in a couple of slides. It's possible to deduce what is the strain in this material, right, by the what force you need effectively to compress them. Right?
Why is the right picture darker?
This darker than this one? Yeah, that's maybe just kind of formatting of this one. I don't think it's really that. Right, so that's kind of something kind of showing exactly the same with the higher magnification, right? So you see this, I think you see the edge of the graphene, it's effectively darker. Why is that? So because graphene is kind of lifted up there, so therefore you have the more springiness, right? So that, so. And then this area which we kind of nano-iron this down, right? So there, so you effectively could see you have good contact and you have effectively creating nano wrinkles of this scale, maybe 10 nanometers or like this, right? So we effectively can manipulate without damaging the graphene itself.
The edge is not strong, is that it stands
so,
up?
Yeah, so we believe it stands up, right? So for there, right? So that's most likely.
But not a scroll.
That's a good question, right? So therefore, the question is on what is the scale of this, right? So therefore, it's... it doesn't look like a scroll from topography. We always have to compare topography with stiffness, because that gives you like two like independent measurements what's happening there. So we believe that's just kind of slight delamination there. Right?
Well, would it have been a scroll with substantial rolling after erosion to become wider?
Probably true, right. So we don't see this, right, so there. Yeah, we don't see that.
And this is monolayer. Have you done the same thing with bilayer?
We done this with multilayer. I will show to you what we saw with multilayer.
Sorry, just one more.
Yeah, no, it's really, that's what it's for, right? So it's not.
It would be like the smallest bubbles do not seem to be triangular. They're completely.
That's a good question. So it's effectively they are anisotropic, I would say. So the strain is anisotropic, and we effectively observe this in many cases. So it's deposited there and. As I say, like, we probably now have some kind of idea about how to link the strain in the graphene with these measurements, right? So I will come to this one in a second.
Did you try to scan the substrate before placing graphene?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, we scan substrate.
And how it looks like?
Yeah, so the substrate is not very different from whatever it was there, right?
No, these features that you see.
Ah, like this? No. Effectively, how do you work with the substrate? That's probably it's something like I had a kind of MPhil student a couple of years ago. And then we had like some big, we call it graphene preparation party. Okay, I see that. Right, so. What? Well, look, you didn't show the watch, right?
No?
Okay. Yeah, you have a wrist, right? Okay. So and so we had a graphene party. So we very careful how we do this, right? So therefore we are preparing this with Piranha and everything. So then we go into the UV cleaning, not UV cleaning, this plasma cleaning, right? Immediately within like few minutes, right? So this sample should be going into the preparation, so then we cleave it again within a few minutes. It's going there. The surfaces are very clean, so therefore they're not having anything there, right? So, but and also like we have another tools. For example, when people preparing graphene, they use this scotch tape and everything. Our last stage is effectively not scotch tape; it's another kind of transfer material, and it means that graphene seen the surface only once, right? So you have the big graphite flake, right? So then what's happening? So you lift part of it, right? So for this area, you've never seen anything but the freshly cleaved graphite. And here, there is a graphene which sits on the surface. So that makes sure, some other areas, they have contact with contamination. So therefore, but we look at the areas where it was a graphite flake first removed and left one layer of graphene and some layer of clean surface. That's what it is, right? But it's interesting that, you know, Rakishan asking this question. That's that's a big thing actually done. Okay, so how do we measure this nanomechanical graphene properties? In this particular case, we actually try to see, okay, we have this delamination. Can we do something like artificial delamination, right? So there. And we put this in this special trench, which is created in the, it's not a beam lithography, it's special lithography, which we developed specifically for this, which is only 180 nanometers wide trench, very rectangular. And here we put the graphene, right? And this is our nanodomes, which you could saw before. And this is trench. And we wanted to see like what's happening in this case. Here's the transducer is here, so we can vibrate it at low frequencies and high frequencies. And let's see what's happening there. Right. If you look this in there with ultrasonic force microscopy, what you see here that your stiffness of this graphene layer becomes really negligible in the area of trench. It's completely like down. Why? The reason is because it's really very soft, flexibly soft. So therefore you have to use here something which is able to see the softer, the force modulation, effectively, where you do this at low frequency, because now this cantilever spring and this is very comparable. You don't need effectively using mass for this one, right? So for that trench. Okay, what's happening if you just use it with a force modulation? So this is 10-layer graphene, or kind of thin graphite, you call it, and this is 11 layers. And you use force modulation, you just vibrate like this, the sample. And if, for example, the graphene would be infinitely stiff, so therefore the tip will go exactly the same distance. If it's softer, it goes a bit less, right? If it's even softer, it goes less. If it's infinitely soft, it doesn't go at all, right? So, and then we see, for example, with force modulation, we can distinguish between 10 layers and 11 layers. And when we see this graphene, which goes nicely on the surface, nicely before we apply the ultrasonic vibration, which now gives us the complementary things, exactly the same area. So this is the where 10 and 11 graphene layer boundary goes. Then you see here that you have these kind of bulges, right? So here with ultrasound, because smaller bulges, they have higher stiffness. And I'll show you in a moment what we think, how we can determine the stiffness. And so at the same time, this is for the ultrasound becomes infinitely stiff. Infinitely soft. So therefore, what we can do, we can use both methods to study the small area delaminations, right, so these nanodomes, as well as areas on the trench. Because this actually shows a very interesting result, which you can show in the moment. Okay, so that's how we can think about, so what kind of simulation we can do about this one, and what kind of analysis. People are effectively doing this kind of, films on the surface of compressive stress. And if you have film on the surface, you have compressive stress, what's happening? Unless the stress above some critical area, or critical stress, it kind of stays there. If it's above critical stress, it buckles, right? I mean, it's something, stability of the rod, you know, this kind of famous instability there. So, and it's possible to evaluate what is this critical stress as a function of the area of the contact and a function of the, and function of the graphite thickness T here, right? And this is the elastic modulus, which is effectively Young modulus divided at 1 minus Poisson ratio square. effective Young modulus of the contact. So it means that if you have bigger delamination, right, it's easier for even for smaller stress buckle. It kind of makes sense. If you have thicker film, it's harder. You need to apply more stress for this to buckle, right? So so then it's possible to find what would be the delamination height as a function of stress, which in excess to this critical stress. Go ahead.
So it doesn't stick to something? There's no assumption that...
This is a good question, right. This is a good question. No. In this particular thing, so we haven't considered this. If you put this in the model, we really will be happy, right? Good. Yeah, very good question, because it depends. If it sticks, so the fact that it stabilizes the compressive strain, right? So that. So what effectively this tells you about the delamination height? If this is the stress, so this is your critical stress, so you have no delamination height, and then after this, it goes roughly as a square root, especially of the higher stresses, right? So that. So that's all right, but what it actually tells you, if you see there what's the delamination height, right? And if you know what's the thickness of your graphene film, you can assume like standard 1 TPa for this E effective modulus. You know the size of this one, you can estimate what is your effectively excess stress in the film. So therefore, these kind of small domes which we observe there, right? So if you know their size A, right? If you know their height, H, and if you know the graphene thickness, because that's all parameters which we measure in experiment, we can effectively evaluate what is the internal stress in this system. Now, another thing, so how can we evaluate the stiffness of this nanodome?
My question was, if there is some attraction to the substrate, wouldn't you need the extra energy?
No. And also, it will stabilize this. You will need the extra stress. But that's not in this model. This model assumes that your buckling, right, so is occurring without effectively this attraction. And this is something which is a question of the stability, question of the calculation. You're absolutely right. We have to take this into account, right? So at this stage, we think, okay, the attraction is not very strong, right? So because it's actually we believe that graphene is kind of rests on the spikes of the roughness of the surface here, and this effectively doesn't create very strong adhesion of graphene to the surface, which is probably the case. Did we quantify this? No. Is it in the model? No. If like any referee probably will say, okay guys, what about this one, right? Can you please provide this number? And he would be right, right? So she wouldn't be right.
I'm not agreeing.
Yeah, nevertheless, it's true thing, and we have to really consider this, right? Okay. So now, how you can evaluate the stiffness of these nanodomes? It's possible to evaluate the stiffness if you have the energy of the, this nanodome, and then you have the energy as the function of the height of this one. It's effectively the first derivative of energy is the force, right? So therefore, du dh, right? And the second derivative is the stiffness which we measure, right? So it's possible effectively to do this evaluation of the stiffness and calculate what is the energy here. So, and it effectively gives like very interesting formula, kind of like try to assemble this together. So that something, so the stiffness will depend on the, of course, Young modulus of the material, which is a good thing. So it will depend on the height of the material, right? So for the height of this protrusion, thickness of the film and size of the delamination. What it tells you?
Where does this A come from?
A comes from our measurements, right?
Yeah, but what determines?
That's actually a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. Why this A? So in principle, what you could think, right? So therefore, probably your A is as small as possible for the particular strain, right? So there.
Are you assuming any particular shape for this dome? Or?
For this dome? No, but effectively, if you have this.
One dimensional
is most likely is that what is in the calculation, it's sine function, right? So really. So I mean, offset sine, or offset cosine, right? So, so therefore, this is the shape. So therefore, it has the derivative here. Is zero, and so it has the maximum in the center, right? Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of its interesting formula, but what effectively it tells you? The thicker is the material, right? So the stiffer is this, fine, good. So, but also the wider is this A, right? The softer is stiffness, and that's exactly why we're able to see these things with ultrasonic force microscopy, which effectively measures the highest stiffness because the A is smaller. And that's why we are able to see these with the force modulation microscopy for the softer stiffness. So therefore, it's possible effectively to see that how we can cover the wider range, and because you have the square root dependence on the high, the size of this delamination, so that effectively allows you to tell why we use ultrasonic force microscopy more efficiently for the flat substrates there. Another thing which is interesting is that if you have this, if you collapse this thing, right, that's good. What we also tried, we tried effectively to pull graphene, right, so from this strange. So you saw this force modulation curve here. So for this, for example, this cross section. So if you go cross section, this is silicon. So then you go onto the graphene, you have smaller stiffness, and then it's going up. This is the just the boundary effect because of the tip shape here. And you effectively see, okay, you have the flat bottom here of the stiffness, fine. So what's happening if you started to pull this, right? You ask about what's forces, pull it, and still have negative forces. In this particular case, what's happening? So graphene lies on the trench like this. When you pull it, so and when you scan across, what's happening, which we believe, is that graphene film it been pulled by the tip, and it's pulled maximum in the very center, and then it goes down. It's like a wave which propagates through this graphene film which sits there, right? So you just go in there, kind of pull it, and then it drops there again, right? So when we measure the stiffness, that actually gives an even more interesting thing. The stiffness becomes very flat here. So once it's pulled, we believe that the range where we have this really like bending as a, not as a membrane, but as a slab, as a sheet, thin slab. This is five-layer graphene, which is about 1.2 nanometers, right, thick. And another thing which we saw here the drop of the stiffness in the very beginning. And we were really puzzled. You don't see any drop when you have positive forces, right? You have the smooth transition. And when you have negative forces, you have this drop. And that actually came out to our mind, right? So actually, Valoria kind of said this. So that's came to our mind after Valoria said this, okay. Right. So that's maybe effectively buckling, right, what's happening here, is that when graphene is always like this way, it has the stiffness, right, so which is positive stiffness. But when we effectively buckle it, then it goes like up, right? So therefore, at the moment of this buckling, right, moment of transition, your stiffness goes to zero. Or at least drops, right, so there. So when it's going like up, then you have again high stiffness. In the moment of buckling, it's actually zero stiffness. And that's effectively what we observe here in the very beginning. And then what we've done, another thing, it's one of our students who will be doing the PhD with us next year, is effectively observe that at some negative forces, you see the some lines of the stiffness, lower stiffness, in the middle of the film. Right? So therefore, what it means, we believe these are the lines where it switches from up to down. Right? It's reversible switching. There's nothing else happening here. But effectively, the stiffness in these lines tells you that your strain in the film is inhomogeneous, as it is. Right? So there. And because otherwise, these buckling lines will go only kind of the parallel things here. But it is inhomogeneous. But if you look... Correct. We use the force modulation while one's putting this, right? So we pull it at the constant force, right? So with the negative force. At the same time, we pull and wobble, right? And this wobbling tells you what is the stiffness in the contact there, right?
So what is the fundamental?
Ah, yeah, probably van der Waals.
Can you pull bilayers?
Oh, that's a good question. We don't know. So that's what Volodya suggested. We didn't see anything like this. So it looks like it's just buckles as a whole, right? So therefore, we don't see anything like which is...
But maybe pulling from both sides.
But even if it has split just one layer, it will be difficult to say.
No, well, I don't think it will be difficult to say. The reason is, look at this, right? So this is the stiffness of 11 layers, stiffness of 10 layers, right? It's very different, right? Because your stiffness effectively depends on the T into power of, in this particular case, in the second power, right? So therefore, like you effectively have pretty easy way to discriminate between the stiffness. So therefore, if you would have this delamination here, you would have some areas where you have stiffness from 5 layers to 4 layers, you will have even higher change there. So therefore, we believe this is just a buckling which is happening there. And so this effectively shows on the stiffness of this one. And in homogeneity of this buckling, it's effectively very much linked with this internal stresses which we detect from the UFM, right? So therefore, here you see nothing of this one, but this should create some stresses which goes in the trench, right? So that's why they create with a similar periodicity, similar scale of the buckling trend. Okay, so therefore this is something, again, it's like still nothing, not much theory done about this one. Another thing is that we effectively could see the transition between the so-called beam regime and membrane regime. What is the beam regime? It's when this effectively goes with a very small displacement, right? So there, and the force of the action is not really stretches the membrane. It's like, you know, like a plate, right? So that if you push it, so therefore, like you have the stretch, and then you have contribution of the forces in plane to the stiffness of the membrane. And we observe this, and I don't have this plot with me, but it was very fun to see when you pull it from this positive forces to negative forces, you have the slope going like this, and then increasing with the membrane symmetrically, right? So therefore, you have softer system when you just have it like beam deflection, right? Like plate deflection, and stiffer when it's membrane. All right, so we can see something about the folded graphene, but I probably won't be going much about this one here. So what I would like to say, this is something which is still very much unknown to us, and we just started. So people study graphene in vacuum, kind of in air, right? We try actually to understand how graphene would work in the environment with interaction with, say, liquids. Why are we doing this? I have a pretty big project which effectively works on the graphene as supercapacitors and rechargeable batteries, right? So there, inevitably, it has to be in the interaction with liquids. What will be its like mechanical properties, thermal properties, electrical conductivity? That's something which we're exploring. And that's one of the first studies when we see...
Can I ask one question more to the previous? So yeah. what's the resonance frequency then?
Yeah, that's a very good question, right? So that. It's possible to estimate the resonance frequency for these, right? So there, and the resonance frequency is because graphene is very lightweight, right? Even if with these very small stiffnesses, the resonance frequency lies there in hundreds of megahertz, right? So there, right? So therefore, effectively for this one, it's even higher. So it's many hundreds of megahertz, sub gig there. So the question is, can we measure this dynamic phenomena? Yes, but that will be the very end slide here. So how we do this? Right. So in a way, so what you're asking, what you're saying is that do we have to take into account the dynamic phenomena when we do this exploration? No, not at this stage. Right. So interaction with liquid. So you saw this in air. So the graphene, for example, this is graphene when a lot of internal strain is there. You see the topography is really like crinkled paper, right? So there. And then you could see some areas which are bulging areas, which we can see that their stiffness is different. What actually happening if you put this in liquid, for example, in water and dodecane? Water is very much polar liquid, which likes silicon oxide, doesn't like much graphene, while dodecane actually like graphene more probably than silicon oxide. But what we observe that all these rings, they're effectively kind of flattening out, right? Why it's happening, we don't really understand yet, right? So therefore, there are some kind of, you see, spots here which are still having this delamination, but they are very much single there. So whether it's surface energy which kind of changes it, whether graphene started to slide and relax this strain, right? So because the liquid acts as a lubricant in between the graphene and surface, we don't know, right? So therefore that's really, but what we do observe that your kind of stiffness measured, the delamination of graphene is different. And you see these spots, it looks like even like some contaminants, like some residual bubbles which stay there under the surface. And they show in this kind of stiffness changes.
What if you remove the water?
If you remove the water and see what's happened afterwards. Yeah, that's a good question. We should try to do this. You have to do this carefully, because you remove the water, then you wait or you bake or what you do this. So therefore, or you see this dynamically what's happening once you remove this. Yeah. Okay, so another thing what we observed, when you have the, for example, FM tip starting with the graphene, and that's no kind of very standard thing. When we pull it out, what we observe that the force after you pull it out kind of still kept even at very high distances between the tip and the graphene surface. So this is the approach of the tip to the surface. There's the standard force as people measure in the atomic force microscope. And if you would have, for example, the stiff surface, it comes here, comes up, right? If you pull it out, it goes down some attraction forces, jumps back. But in this particular case, what's happening is that you have the something still sensing the surface very large distances. What we believe happening there is that we create a bubble in the graphene surface, right? So there, and that's actually happening only in water. It's never happening in dodecane, in the non-polar liquids, right? We create a bubble which kind of stays there some distances with a more or less constant force, which we can deduce closer to the surface tension and measure things, and then effectively spring out of the bubble. In order to prove this, what we've done, we use the same like ultrasonic force measurements, because we know that only when the tip and solid-solid contact, you have the good, you have the non-linearity here. And what you see here, so then when you pull it out, you have the ultrasonic response, which goes to the maximum until here, then it drops, and in this area where you have the force interaction, there's no ultrasonic signal. So therefore, it means that you have something very, very soft interaction there, which we believe is the bubble. So what's happening is there is that whether there are any surface energy, so there which actually will stimulate the creation of the bubble. So that's most likely, but that's effectively what we really observed there. So also we studied the friction of graphene in different environments, in polar and non-polar environment liquid, and this gives you also very kind of interesting data of the how the graphene kind of slides the surfaces, and effectively it correlates with the surface energy there. It's not viscous motion, because that's effectively if you think about how like it goes, even if it slides there through the liquid, so therefore we don't have the rate dependence or velocity dependence there, so easier the sliding. Okay, probably, this is kind of, do I have some time or wrap up? What is?
Time and more of this one.
Well, then you decide how much.
Yeah, you decide, otherwise like I don't want to put you asleep over there.
How much more do you want?
No, maybe like I would say
it's what, 15 minutes?
No, 15 or maybe 10 minutes. Like two things what I would like to say, because you already kind of primed on the ultrasonic things well, right? So two things I would like to say. One about the surface, studied through the surface, but like bulk layers, right, so there. And another about the thermal probes measurements, right? So that's maybe 10 minutes. So one of them is what's happening if graphene is thicker, say graphite flake, right? So it's 50 nanometers thick graphite flake. That's where you look at the topography of the normal contact FM. This is tapping FM topography and phase image there. And this effectively graphene which sits, you would say, on the rows of pillars, right? So like this. Rows of pillars of the plastic. It's cycloolefin, kind of very nice plastic there. So graphene sits there, very nice. You see like it's flat, everything is good. What happens if you apply the ultrasonic vibration and see what's happening, right? So that's happening something really interesting. You effectively started to see this, whatever happening on the support. So therefore, the area which are in contact where the ultrasound goes through, you effectively can detect graphene, while the area which doesn't go through, you cannot just see this, vibrations on graphene. That's actually pretty interesting. Then we effectively were looking, okay, what's happening in high magnification, again, this is topo, this is UFM, and you started to see some kind of funny features, right? Okay, you see the area of the contact, but also you see some, you see areas inside the graphene flake. What are they? You don't know first, and then you start effectively to look at the different set forces there. And what we observe, that when you have the graphene flake, and when you apply like low load, you see some kind of fringe patterns there. So, and then when you apply higher loads, these fringe patterns, so for example, these things broadens. What we believe happening is that you have some delaminations within the graphene flake, right? Which when you apply the force, they move out, right? So therefore, is it reversible? Yes, it is reversible. For example, this is set force increase, right? So you go like 0.515. So you see this area goes to the broader area. You receive some kind of other delamination. When you remove the force, it becomes exactly the same picture which was before. So we believe these are some defects which are movable within the kind of this graphene or thin graphite flake there, which we observe in using this ultrasonic imaging, because we can really see through this, right? So that's something, another thing which is possible to do with ultrasonic force microscope.
One question, two slides before. So the fold of
okay, it's not really a fold. It's kind of, it looks like a fold, right? So just because like it, like this. It's not a fold, it's just a graphene which is going like this, then the thicker layer, and it has narrow. It really looks like a fold. It's actually, it's not a fold, what we believe, right? So therefore, that's the continuous layer of the graphene there. What we believe is, right? So
then how come the lower one does not have a boundary in the first step? I mean
this one, right?
Yes. Yeah. I find it surprising that you can see the substrate so close to the folds, like it's completely stuck on the substrate, right? All through the fold. Freestand.
That's actually a good question, right? So we have to, yeah, so that's true. And also, like, you would see here the same jump there, right? So that's interesting. Don't know. That's a good point, right?
Do you say it doesn't jump? If you look at the second picture, it looks like it jumps.
No, yes, but there is no edge here. So that's what we meant, right? There's no edge. It looks like it's like a cliff, like they're going like this, right? Yeah. Yeah, but here you definitely have the high stiffness of this layer. That's for sure. And also, like you have like some areas. For example, this one, right? It looks like pretty different, right? So on this one, and this, for example, this fold. You see this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's effectively goes you kind of no force there, right? No ultrasonic detection there. So the sun doesn't go through. Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting question. So therefore, we just study a few of these. Just these are phenomena which we can observe, right? So there, and these phenomena they are determined by the really nanomechanical applying of the force. What is interesting that even applying very small forces of 10 nanonewtons of these, you effectively can move it, right, in and out, and you can observe these things, right, so there. So that's something which is interesting. Last thing I would like to talk about is about the nanoscale thermal properties of graphene, and this we use the scanning thermal microscopy, right? So, you see, like, we don't use the kind of standard methods. We try to use some different things, right? So and the scanning thermal microscopy is something where you have the heated tip, right? So usually it's made out of, say, highly doped silicon legs and moderately doped. And so therefore, when you apply some potential here, so here the heat is generated. And if the heat is generated, the resistance of this area changes, right? So now imagine if you contact something which is a high thermal conductivity, the heat will go out, temperature drops, so therefore resistance changes, you can measure this. So unfortunately, using this with the air, that's like some of our final element simulation, doesn't make it easy. So because you effectively have huge heat conductance through the air, you really have to work in the vacuum, so which actually provides much better results. So therefore, we have the special vacuum system, which allows you to put the scan probe microscope in the controlled environment. It's high vacuum, it's not huge, but 10 to minus 7 torr, which is all right. So and pretty clean environment. And no heat conductivity, of course, through the through vacuum. It's possible to measure so and calculate what will be the response of the thermal response of the tip with contact of different thermal conductivity materials. But in a way, you have to scratch many things of this. if your contact area becomes smaller than the mean free path of the phonons there, so you have very different way of conducting the heat through this. So therefore, the main thing what we started to do, we started to see, okay, so what we see, we put the graphene on the surface of silicon oxide, silicon substrate, and we saw that graphene looks cold. Okay, it makes sense. Nice thermal conductivity, it looks like colder, so if we can observe the graphene there. What else can we do with this? So we saw the different layers, different thickness, right? We're starting from one monolayer, two, and this, I think in the beginning is five monolayers, right? And you started to see, okay, that one monolayer conducts heat worse than two or three, but per layer is basically conducts heat better, right? That's what we observed. Fine. So people were observing the same data with the resolution probably like this, like about a couple of micrometers, right? So so this actually allows you to measure small scale conductivity. But the most interesting thing comes when you really go to the small scale. Small scale, it means resolution, for example, here in this kind of small area, which you know that there is no graphene here, by, for example, by the friction, because friction is not thickness dependent, and we actually observe kind of this kind of thermal response, which is about like 50 nanometers, which is a good resolution for the many points which we would like to do, and already comes really within the mean free path of phonons in graphene, which is about suspended graphene about 800 nanometers at room temperature. Okay, so now what happens if you put graphene on trench, the same like we've done on nanomechanics, right? So there. Will it be like colder or hotter here? If you think about, if you measure the heat conductance in this area, so therefore heat can be conducted in the graphene layer and through, right? So what happens if you effectively have this in the on the trench? If you have this on the trench, what's happening, you would have the properties of graphene. So you would have the heat conductance on the sidewise, but you don't have any conductance through, right? So you would say, okay, so if you touch it on the trench, it would be hotter. If you trench it here, it will be colder. Do you agree? Yes. Unfortunately, or fortunately, it's not the case, right? What's effectively happening? If you actually see the graphene on the trench, so this is the temperature. The higher is the contrast, higher the temperature. The graphene on the trench is cold, right? Why is that? Right. So here comes, again, so some discussion here with Volodya at the time. So is that if you have graphene which is on the trench, it's effectively, its heat conductance is not impeded by the interaction with the substrate, right? So all the phonons which propagate there, they propagate well, quickly, and everything. Whilst it's on the substrate, you'll have huge interaction with the substrate, so therefore phonons, they scatter, they go slower. For example, if you think, okay, graphene suspended conductivity, or sorry, the electron conductivity is definitely better on the suspended graphene than on the surface. Exactly the same happening here. The point is that the loss of the conductivity sidewise is stronger here than the gain of the conductivity through. So therefore, we observe the colder area of graphene on the trench. And also what is interesting, so we can observe the with the resolution of 50 nanometers, and we effectively could see that on the trench and nearby on the different thicknesses of the layers, so that when it sits on the substrate, your mean free path of phonons probably less than 50 nanometers, right? When it's on the trench, it's harder to judge because we effectively have to have bigger trench now and scan across it, and that's what we're trying to do now, right?
Is the phonon interaction so strong? Actually, it's non-harmonic phonons. Well, I think in this trench, it's just scattering from edges.
If it's not entrenched, then it's on.
It's interaction with this substrate, right?
If it's interaction with the substrate.
Yeah. So yeah, effectively.
So harmonicity plays no role, and only
regarding graphene. I know the estimates of all the materials in the micro, and the trenches in Europe were saying whether it did matter or not.
So effectively, yeah. So the trench itself is fully ballistic, right? So there, but once it's coming to the substrate, is effectively starting to be really diffusive there. So that's what we believe will happen when this scale.
Which is in both cases. It's,
yeah. Yeah, but if you think about this, thermal phonons, the same like acoustical phonons, right? If you have the acoustical phonons, the plate on the substrate, it really have completely different propagation there. As the free suspended, right? So that's what's happening here, right? Okay, so that's one of the observations we kind of seen this. At the end, so therefore, we have now tools for measuring these properties of the thermal on a very small scale, and that's what we do, and we try to study different structures involving the heterostructures of graphene, right? So that. Another thing, like you're asking, right, so there, what's happening if you vibrate both? Effectively, that's interesting, that because once you vibrate the sample, the tip cannot move, right? At the same time, when you vibrate the base of the cantilever, right, the cantilever transmits the vibration to the very end. Okay, there is some difference here, because you vibrate the whole cantilever, right? If you try to vibrate the cantilever at the same frequency through the very tip, it's very soft contact, so therefore the vibration doesn't propagate back. But because you vibrate all the base of the cantilever with a big transducer, it goes here. So therefore you can mix these two frequencies. If you have two frequencies, one of them like omega tip, another of them in omega sample, so then effectively you have the beating of two frequencies, you have delta omega. What is interesting that you have any phase which is contributing to this interaction, so this phase will come to the lower frequency. It's principle heterodyny, down frequency conversion, right? So, or frequency down conversion. And it means that we use the same nonlinearity now to detect the phase. And we effectively saw that it's possible, for example, using two vibrations at frequency of, say, 10 megahertz, right? So, have this beating observed there very easily. So, and you effectively can detect this at the difference frequency, for example, in this case of 5 or like 15 kilohertz. What actually gives you? If you have frequency 10 megahertz, the period of this is correspondingly 100 nanoseconds, right? So if you measure this period within the one, any phase within 1 degree, which is very easy to use any local amplifier, or even better, even with 1 degree, you come 1/360th of 100 nanoseconds, you come to like to 300 picoseconds, right? So therefore, you effectively can use this scanning probe microscope to come already to sub-nanosecond time regime of the force interactions there. And sub-nanosecond is something regarding the frequency of the resonance. It's already within this range. So therefore, that's something which we actually will be doing next. We would like to see, by using two frequencies of the cantilever and the sample, to see the phase delays with all this kind of floppy floppy suspended films, and also on the films which has the internal structure, because maybe there are some time domain phenomena inside there. So that's probably about it, right? So therefore that's in conclusion. So what we can do, we can map the graphene nanomechanics, right? So, and for imaging of these structures, we need both soft and hard touch, right? So therefore, soft touch for the bigger floppy things and hard touch for the small area delaminations. So therefore, using this ultrasonic force microscopy is really beneficial. So we observe like different phenomena like nanodome corrugation, layer folding, graphene buckling. So therefore, that's really can play with these things. And also we can image the graphene thermal transport. In particular, we see the suspended graphene layer showing like low thermal resistance and high thermal conductivity than substrate with this resolution. We can do now this in liquids, and we continue doing both measurements in liquids there. And we try to apply the dynamical physical phenomena by these mixing frequencies with the using kind of this method. So that's it. So that's quite a few funding agencies and collaborators. We've done a lot, and that's kind of the team of us, which is like Franco Dinelli, a lot of providing theoretical support, and Ben Robinson and Scalantoni, he's from Scuola Normale from Pisa, and Peter Tovey doing kind of thermal measurements. Right, so that's it.
So which kind of elastic module are you found for
that? Right, so that's a good question. So we what we do, we don't try to solve the inverse problem, we solve the direct problem. Using the elastic module like 1 terapascal, so we have very reasonable data for the stresses and for the stiffnesses there. So therefore, this kind of confirms that this module is probably correct, even for layers which are 5 to 10 nanometers thick, for in-plane moduli, right? Yeah.
And the strains you have, the strains you estimate, how large are they?
The strain which is there, right? So strain with respect to the critical strain, or?
Right.
So with respect to the critical strain, it is on the order of like 1.5 to 2, right? So there is the very beginning of the critical strain. So we see there, so it's not like hugely strained there, right? So, but... No. It's very small. It's very small. It's like 0.05% something. It is not big. Because effectively you don't need very high strain to buckle these films.
On the fringes, have you ever seen wrinkles like Jean Lau or something?
Okay, so we see the wrinkles when you pull it, or no? We saw the homogeneity there. I mean, topographical wrinkles, right? Not the stiffness wrinkles. We didn't see the topographical wrinkles as such, but. What we do observe, we observe this, as I showed there. So we observe the buckling, which was really more or less regular there, right? So this buckling, which was there. So it's not wrinkles as such, but it's something which tells you about kind of this regular thing there. But on the when you see the topography there, okay, you may say there are some wrinkles, but it's like it's not something which is conclusive, right? Not regular things, right? Which is, yeah.
Did you try to do this instead of with trenches with fine size wells?
Yeah, we tried to do this, right? So therefore, that's another thing is that trenches were done for the particular purpose, right? Because we wanted to have something underneath the surface, right? Well, the well it kind of will be sealed there, right? So there, and also well is depending on the thermal expansion, so you could have some bulging there, right? So there. But we do have something on the wells, right? So it didn't work that well yet. The reason is that when you put this on the well, it has to be very, very well attached to the surface, right? So there. While trenches, we can create a very sharp trench. With wells, there is some kind of residual bulge there, and so you don't have the good boundary conditions. For the attachments, so that in our measurements, right? So there, other people done wells, which are big wells, right?
The nice thing about wells, I guess, is that when you get buckling, you also expect to get like wrinkles around the boundary because it's not easy to match the deformation.
Right. No, we don't see it like this. We do have some samples with wells, right? So there, but I wouldn't say that they were perfect samples. So these were like much more. Reliable sums. Just, you know, it's about maybe experimental techniques how you deposit this, right? And also the substrate. You see the wells, as I say, with very sharp edges, right? So without kind of rim. And we had wells with the rim as how they were produced for us. And we didn't like it because it didn't attach well.
On that figure A?
Yeah.
Am I imagining it, or do you have wrinkles like
the top? So something those, right? So there.
For example, this also on the top.
Yeah, it's hard to say. So whether they're coming from the measurements, so we have to double check this, right? So that there may be kind of the noise, right? So that.
It's indicated directional scan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, this is hard to say. So if effectively, that's as I say, you have to work a little bit more with this one, kind of tilted. Also, because we have the system which allows you to work at the different temperatures. Right. We effectively would like to see the different thermal expansion of this one, just observe what's happening then, right?
just a comment that if you want to see at least compressive frequency, you can just heat it up and cool it down again. That's how we can generate a lot of
right. So not necessarily in situ, you can do this ex situ and then put it inside, right? Yeah, because graphene will kind of compress at higher temperatures, right? So the food compress, and then you have, yeah? So that's a good point, right? So to which temperatures you heat it up?
I say 200 Celsius would be enough, 300.
In nitrogen?
In argon.
In argon, okay. So but just like without oxygen, right? Yeah, sure.
200 to 300 Celsius.
Okay.
So you mentioned about thermal expansion coefficient. Do you see any?
No, we didn't measure thermal expansion. So we have ability to do variable temperature. We haven't done it yet, right? So we can work from the liquid nitrogen to like 500 C, right? So there, in situ. So, but that's still kind of being prepared now.
So it finishes by itself.
Did you by any chance vary the frequency in the chirp to look at the contact resonances of whatever you were trying to do?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So we done not for the chirp, but for the force modulation, right? We found that if you go, like, there are some resonances there, right? We effectively even sweep them with the network analyzer, just trying to observe this, right? But okay, it was project for a free student, he has to complete it, and we wanted to have some kind of more or less packaged thing with them, and that's why we used below 2 kilohertz to make sure that it is like all the vibration was isostatic really there. But we do observe this kind of change, and it was maybe 40, 50 kilohertz shifts there, the frequencies, right? So that we do observe that was there. We intentionally look this because there are other resonances in the system. Piezo, the tubes and everything, right? So we done this on the silicon, and then we done this on graphene, and we done this on graphene with different different samples. It was different there, but we didn't go much into this one because we want to kind of round up this piece of work, right? But it is there and it is observable, right?
How far are you from getting results in the
dynamics? No, we are already doing this dynamics. I mean, when we apply this to graphene.
You only have images.
No, this down mixing we've done on different things. We've done on polymers, we've done on the thermal expansion of like different things. It's like we call it hadron force microscopy, and it's published 2002 or something. Uh-huh. Right, so first time, and then we've done some other things, right?
And is the resolution not much better here with ultrasound?
No, it's the same. Effectively, from the point of view of the spatial resolution, it's the same on linearity of the tip surface which you use there. So spatial resolution is the same. Phase resolution is very different. Its phase resolution is different with the ratio of frequencies, right? So there, which is like three orders of magnitude. Really go to sub-nanosecond sensitivity there. Right?
Do you study suspended samples, which can be considered as larger trenches?
You mean suspended samples?
Yes, suspended. So, what information?
So, when you say suspended sumps, what do you mean? Sumps on bigger trenches, not
More or less, yes.
Yeah, we studied, right? So, the point is that they were very floppy there, and this is also what other people done, right? So, other people done, they try to measure the stiffness of the bigger, like 5 microns or several microns things. So what we'd like to do, we'd like to really to go to the smaller, stiffer, probably hopefully the higher frequency things for the kind of other kind of quantum phenomena, oscillators and everything, right? So that was kind of just less interesting for us.
What's the temperature that they use?
Yeah, this was room temperature, right? So, but we can work, as I say, from the kind of liquid nitrogen to like 500 K. All right.
So, the